talking about importunity. We were talking about it last week. Jesus taught his disciples two parables concerning praying with importunity. Importunity, shamelessness, impudence, just asking over and over again. One was the needy friend at midnight. That was Luke 11:5-10. We looked at that last week. The other is the unjust judge, Luke 18. Here's the story. And he spake a parable unto them to this end, and here he tells us the purpose, that men ought always to pray and not to faint. Don't give up the praying. Saying, here's the parable. There was in a city a judge which feared not God, neither regarded man. He didn't care. It's all about him. And there was a widow in that city, and she came unto him, saying, Avenge me of mine adversary. And he would not for a while, but afterward he said within himself, Though I fear not God, nor regard man, yet because this widow troubleth me, I will avenge her, lest by her continual coming she weary me. Since it's all about me, I don't want to be worn out. And the Lord said, Hear what the unjust judge saith. And shall not God, who is not an unjust judge, avenge his own elect, which cry day and night unto him? This is that importunity, see? Though he bear long with them, I tell you that he will avenge them speedily. From God's point of view, it's going to be speedily, maybe not from ours. Nevertheless, when the Son of Man cometh, shall he find faith on the earth? He says, do you have the faith to intercede so determinedly, or just not that much faith? So this shows God's children crying day and night, yet God bearing long to answer. Now he says that in reality, even the bearing long is speedily. From God's point of view, I think speedily indicates just as fast as it could be possibly done, and done well, done right. He asks if he shall find faith when he returns. So it is in such times we have the greatest difficulty in prayer. He tells us we must expect difficulties that are conquered only by determined persistence. Let me say it again. We must expect difficulties in this life that are conquered only by determined persistence. We see that prayer will not always be easy. And so what's the problem? What's going on here? In the parables, and this is a little bit of a disconnect as we think about it. In the parables, the one being asked is troubled. She's troubling me, the judge says. See? For this reason, the asker must be determined and keep on asking. However, in reality, since it is God that is asked, he has no trouble in answering our request. So what's going on here? This means that all the trouble really resides in us, the asker. He represents in these parables the person being asked, troubled, delaying to some degree the answer. But the implication then is he's talking about us talking to God, and God is not troubled, God is not bothered, so the trouble's with us. Somehow we have an incapacity to receive the blessing. There is something about us that cannot yet be blessed. If God has a difficulty in giving us a blessing, it is our embedded sinfulness. Not necessarily some particular sin that you're doing. It's just the way we think of the world, the way we interact with the world, the way we belong to the world. God in all his wisdom, his righteousness, and his love will not give us what would do us harm, and in that state that would harm us. Our sin or sinful attitudes makes it impossible for God to answer our requests immediately. Let's explore that. How do we solve the problem? To break through the barrier of our sin, God makes our answers depend on faithful determination in prayer. This is that key. It is in the doing of it, the repeating of it, the not giving up on it, that we find how we conquer the problem in us. You catch that? It is in the determined doing over and over again that we find we can conquer the problem in us. We are to wrestle in prayer with God, not to overcome His resistance, but to overcome our wrong attitudes. Throughout the ages, men have prayed with the sense that there were difficulties in heaven to overcome. As they pleaded with God for the removal of the unknown obstacles, they came to a state of utter brokenness and helplessness. They said, it's not working, but it has to happen. I must do it. And they broke down. They threw themselves before God as helpless. They became conscious of their utter dependence on Him. I cannot do this. I cannot make this happen. I am helpless in this thing. I have to depend entirely on You. They became entirely resigned to Him. They united with His will. Do it as You want, you see. Then the hindrance, actually within themselves, disappeared. The problem in heaven was the problem of sin in the asker's heart. Askers, sounds funny. By removing the one, they removed the other. So I have to ask you tonight, do you have a misconception of prayer? Is it rubbing the lamp and getting the genie, get the three wishes? Perhaps you do not pray as you should because His call to continued and persistent prayer seems unreasonable and arbitrary. God, You can do it, and I'm asking You to do it. You should be doing it, you see. It's a misconception about prayer. You must see that the secret to answered prayer is often the need to change us into obedient and faithful people who are willing to continue in prayer, to do what He said, to keep doing it, to keep asking and seeking and knocking, just being persistent in that. The very difficulty of the call to importunity is our greatest privilege. So the good use of difficulties. Well, difficulties in life call forth our powers as nothing else can. The old saying is, necessity is the mother of invention, meaning the need, your need, deep need, feeling the need, calls forth the best that we have. After the prosperity and frivolity of the roaring 20s, the need of the great need that they felt during the Great Depression and the seriousness of World War II, it built strength of character and ennobling of spirit in our country. So it is that Christian discipleship is a discipline of mind, of body, and of spirit. Where do you get that kind of discipline, that kind of discipleship? Difficulty and delay require persevering prayer to obtain the true blessing of heaven. While we are concerned for the needs of others, God is dealing with the needs He sees in us. He is forging us into the effective prayer warrior that we wish we were. When we wrestle with God, He's not weakened, but we are strengthened. We come to realize our own weaknesses and our unworthiness. So we yield to His Spirit to speak through us in our infirmity, in our weakness. Romans 8:26. Likewise, the Spirit also helpeth our infirmities. For we know not what we should pray for as we ought. But the Spirit itself maketh intercession for us with groanings which cannot be uttered. So in short, our will, our strength, our goodness, our self-importance, and all our flesh are crucified, are mortified, are made dead. Go back in Gethsemane. Jesus prayed repeatedly. Jesus repeated his prayer. Matthew 26:44. And he left them and went away again and prayed the third time, saying the same words. Just over and over again. And was strengthened by an angel so that he could pray more earnestly. Even then. Luke 22:43-44. And there appeared an angel unto him from heaven, strengthening him, and being in an agony, he prayed more earnestly. And his sweat was, as it were, great drops of blood falling down to the ground. Sounds like the utmost of his ability. And then he was heard. Hebrews 5:7. Who in the days of his flesh, when he had offered up prayers and supplication with strong crying and tears unto him that was able to save him from death, and was heard in that he feared. To fear here means that he did it the way God wanted. He wasn't doing it just to the extent that he thought it was enough. He did it the way God wanted him to do it. Catch this. His victory in prayer was seen in his losing self-will to God's will. Over and over again. Not my will, but thine be done. So, consistent prayer is a kind of crucifixion. It is a yielding of our flesh to death. I have to do this again. You're calling on me to pray this again. The very difficulty of continual prayer is our highest privilege and the source of our richest blessing. Let's kind of break this down. What are the elements of importunity in intercession? Three things. One, persistence. Two, determination. And three, intensity. Persistence is just the doing it again, but the determination is that will forcing the repetition. And then the intensity is, make each prayer greater. That's the progress of asking, seeking, then knocking, you see. It grows. So the strong desire for the urgent need of our friend drives us to refuse to accept unanswered prayer. This refusal makes us persistent. No? I'm going to ask again. Persistent grows into a determination to continue, to give whatever time and effort are needed until the answer comes. The prayer then increases in intensity in its presentation to God, becoming a supplication with great pleading, like Jesus prayed with strong crying and tears. Jesus himself. While importunity does mean a kind of impudence and rashness, it does not mean a disregard for God's sovereignty, the fact that he is in charge. Importunity does not try to boss God. Prayer is not telling God what must be done. You see the example of Abraham pleading for Lot and his family? Remember that? He starts out with a Lot and comes down. Genesis 18:32, and he said, Oh, let not the Lord be angry, and I will speak yet but this once. Peradventure 10 shall be found there. And he said, I will not destroy it for 10's sake. From the large number down, 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 down. Genesis 19:29, and it came to pass when God destroyed the cities of the plain because he did not find 10 or less, that God remembered Abraham. See, the prayer was answered. though not in that way of not destroying those cities, and sent Lot out of the midst of the overthrow when he overthrew the cities in the which Lot dwelt. I think we can see another example of Jacob wrestling with God. Always a strange picture, but that is the very thing of persistence in asking. Here's the story, Genesis 32, 24 to 32. And Jacob was left alone, and there wrestled a man with him until the breaking of the day. And when he saw that he prevailed not against him, when the man saw that he could not prevail against Jacob, he couldn't beat him in the wrestling match. He wouldn't let go. He touched the hollow of his thigh, and the hollow of Jacob's thigh was out of joint as he wrestled with him. And he said, "Let me go, for the day breaketh." And he said, "I will not let thee go, except thou bless me." And he said unto him, "What is thy name?" He asked the man. The man asked him, and he said, "Jacob." And he said, "Thy name shall be called no more Jacob, but Israel," prince with God. "For as a prince hast thou power with God and with men, and hast prevailed." You win. And Jacob asked him and said, "Tell me, I pray thee, thy name." And he said, "Wherefore is it that thou dost ask after my name?" And he blessed him there. And Jacob called the name of the place Peniel, "For I have seen God face to face." He found out who the man was. "And my life is preserved." And as he passed over Peniel, the sun rose upon him, and he halted upon his thigh. Wherefore the children of Israel eat not of the sinew which shrank, which is upon the hollow of the thigh unto this day, because he touched the hollow of Jacob's thigh in the sinew that shrank. So we see Jacob here in his impudence. "I will not let thee go except thou bless me." Talking to God like that. How dare he? But it was too great a thing. He would not let it go. Yet in this you can recognize there is no pride that he imagines he can force God to do his will. In fact, see that the answer to his request for blessing comes in the change in Jacob himself. He changed his name, citing a change of character. Jacob the deceiver to Israel, prince with God. Supplanter. When Jesus taught us to believe that what we ask we will receive, he was vindicating Jacob's words. To believe we will receive it, "I will not let you go till you bless me." Mark 11:24, "Therefore I say unto you, what things soever ye desire when ye pray, believe that ye receive them, and you shall have them." Let me remind you also, why did God bless Moses when he prayed with such impudence? Exodus 32:31-32. "And Moses returned unto the Lord and said, Oh, this people have sinned a great sin and have made them gods of gold. Yet now, if thou wilt forgive their sin, and if not, blot me, I pray thee, out of thy book which thou hast written." If you want to keep me, you need to forgive the people. That's persistence. That's impudence. God promised to send an angel. Exodus 32:34. "Now therefore go, lead the people unto the place of which I have spoken unto thee. Behold, mine angel shall go before thee. Nevertheless, in the day when I visit, I will visit their sin upon them." So he says, pardon for now. This was not enough for Moses. He asked for God himself, not just the angel. Exodus 33:14, he said, "My presence shall go with thee, and I will give thee rest." He wins again. God says, okay. Exodus 33:17, the Lord said unto Moses, "I will do this thing also that thou hast spoken, for thou hast found grace in my sight, and I know thee by name." Moses came to the place where he was absolutely given to God. You see, Elijah, who James reminds us was just a man of like passion as us, praying for rain after 3.5 years of drought. Not likely it's going to rain after 3.5 years of drought. 1 Kings 18, 41-43, Elijah said unto Ahab, get thee up, eat and drink, for there is a sound of abundance of rain, or a sound of a noise of rain. So Ahab went up to eat and to drink, and Elijah went up to the top of Carmel, and he cast himself down upon the earth and put his face between his knees, and he said to his servant, go up now, look toward the sea. And he went up and looked, and he said, there is nothing. And he said, go again 7 times. I'm going to be praying all these times. Pray again and again and again. So what are we to do? We need to enter into the difficulty of persistent prayer with the qualities taught in the parables. The true sense of human need, the true Christ-like love, the conscientiousness of personal impotence, powerlessness, complete faith in God to answer, and the assurance that we will receive God's best. That's what these parables are telling us. Jesus ever lives to make intercession for us. The Holy Spirit ever lives to assist us in prayer. The Heavenly Father ever lives to give what we ask, reveal what we seek, and to open the door when we knock. So what stands in the way is our lack of character. So be willing to stand there and then jump into the crucible of testing to be ground into nothing but dependence on God and to be refined in the fire of waiting for God's answer. Is it a godly thing you're asking for? Then he says, keep asking. And when you, in the depth of your heart, are right, then I can answer it.